Hi, and welcome to Revision Media with me, Paul Stevenson. I'll be with you live here for the next hour on, that's through till 9 p.m. here in the UK, London, and through till 3 p.m. Or is it? No, it's through till 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then 2 till 3 p.m. Central Time. So wherever you are around the world, welcome to the show. We're running a little bit late. We had a couple of teething problems earlier, but glad you could join me. If you want to call in, the number is 855-492-6049. That's 855-492-6049. I was going to actually go through, rather than get into too much in, you know, dialogue, well, that's not dialogue, but analysis, I was just actually going to go through a list of stories with a little bit of commentary on each. Like, I mean, keeping it simple, I mean, literally to maybe 60 seconds or something. But because there's just so much I want to cover, you've got, you know, there's this whole coronavirus thing and the manipulation of the data and the destruction and the restructuring of society as we know it, and the damage done to the economy, and this whole great reset thing. And I also wanted to discuss democracy, and it is something we're going to be talking on RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network, which is midday. Well, it's midday every day with Richard Carey, and I co-host with Richard on Mondays. So we're going to try and maybe talk about democracy. Is democracy a good thing? That type of thing. So that's another topic. Digital currencies are another one. These basically, I think, which is where we're headed. The Fed coin, digital currencies, which of course will be sold as a good thing, but will be just another huge step into complete serfdom and complete control by Jewish central banks, essentially, and their minions. And Big Brother. In fact, that will be a huge step into 1984 on steroids. So that was another thing. And then you've got the whole issue of economics. What is good economics? What have we been experiencing? What are the consequences of money printing, of artificially low interest rates, of what we're experiencing now and have been experiencing, particularly since we came off the gold standard, but even over the last century. Now, there's a lot in there. So there's a lot of stuff that I want to talk about and maybe try and structure a little bit. And I've noticed that there's a guy called Doug Casey. Now, he's an economist and he's also an author. And I came across him as a guy who, you know, I've become very interested in the precious metals and mining stocks and things like that this year, obviously in light of the economic crisis which is coming down the tracks. And as I said before, there has been a series of very destructive events that have been set in motion now, and because of various stimulus packages and other measures, the band-aids and kicking the can down the road, the consequences of this haven't been felt yet. And Doug Casey's, you know, he, I don't know, there's just almost nothing that I disagree with the guy on. And you know, it's like when you meet someone like that, you're just immediately on the same wavelength. I'd really like to get him on the show, actually. And he's a bit of a character. And he's got a friend of his, Matthew Smith. And Matthew, you know, he's a sharp guy too. Maybe he wouldn't mind getting him on the show because, and they just kind of do, what we do, you know, on our Monday shows where we just, you know, we discuss things. And they, except they do it on YouTube. And they've this, it's just him and Doug Casey. And they just go through important topics. And I came across this video today and I just thought, you know what, if I've got time, I'm just going to play it. It's only about half an hour because it really does cover a lot of comments, because a lot of areas, and particularly this is the focus really is on these dominoes that have yet to really fall, and the consequences of what we've been witnessing and the acceleration of that this year with, you know, expanding the money supply, basically. Another topic I'd like to get to is World War III, which I think is coming. I think there's going to be a war with China, and there's good reason why there would be a war with China. Because we just, you know, China produces everything and sends it to, particularly sends it, most of it to America, but not just America, to the West generally. And the Western nations don't really produce, and they don't have manufacturing like they used to. We just send increasingly worthless currency. And there's implications and consequences of that too. Because if you can't pay the debt back, then, and China want their money, or China want something that's worth something, then these kind of trade wars can very much lead to world wars, and you're going to see this struggle for hegemony, basically. And I think that war is something that could happen. We can talk about the ins and outs of that as well at some point, but that's a separate issue. But here's Doug Casey and Matthew Smith. I would advise anybody to check this out, actually, this little chat. There's only two of them, and they just have a chat every day about different things. Every day they do it for about 40 minutes or maybe half an hour, and they'll have a new topic every day, and they just discuss it. But they often go off in tangents, Doug particularly, and there's a lot of views here, and he has a very interesting worldview, but he knows his worldview. A lot of people don't know their worldview. They don't know how to think about money. They don't know what they think about money. They don't know what they think about relationships. They don't know what they think about the role of a nation. They don't know what they think about marriage, about divorce, about community, about authority, about whether they want big government, small government, what they think about war, what they think about religion. If you are religious, are you consistent with your own worldview? So I really do like it when people are consistent with their worldview. I mean, we're all inconsistent with our worldviews in one way or another, and I think there does need to be room for flexibility. But Doug's an older guy. Doug's probably in his early 70s, I think. So his, you know, when you get to that age, your worldview is pretty established and set. If you haven't got your worldview by, you know, by the time you're 70, then you're probably not going to ever have one. And I think, sadly, a lot of people, they go to their graves without having ever thought about what they think about anything or, you know, significant issues. A lot of people don't really do a lot of thinking. They think they think. But there's thinking and then there's thinking. You know, shall I make a cup of tea? You know, and then, well, you know, and then there's real thinking. What do you think about money printing? Takes a bit more thought to think about that than it is to think about, well, what do I need to do to make a cup of tea? I need to get up, I need to fill the kettle, I need to click a button. And some people might have views on certain things. And, you know, I meet people all the time who, you know, because you do some thinking, and you recognize your own limitations in thinking, but you recognize thinking is an art form. And you meet people all the time who think they think. And they assume they think, and you know that they don't. And more often than not, they haven't got the humility to sort of accept that someone may have maybe looked at something more than what they have, and the two opinions don't carry the same weight. That's not to say, you know, I don't say that in some arrogance, because I meet people where my opinion doesn't carry the same weight as someone else. If I meet a mechanic, my opinion about what's wrong with my car or how cars operate is not the same as the mechanic who's been working as a mechanic for 20 years. But that's what you get when it comes to thinking with a lot of people, whether it's Brexit, whether it's the Great Reset, whether it's the coronavirus. You'll meet your average person who gets the majority of their information from mainstream media, and these people will act as if they've got their opinion has the same weight as yours. Or quite often I've met people, you know, who have opinions about the Bible. Most of them I know have never read it. I've even met people who have admitted they've never read it, and yet they have such strong opinions on the Bible. And the usual, you know, comments that you hear and with regards to sort of easing tensions when you have a discussion about it as well. Well, you have your opinion, I have my opinion, and we'll agree to disagree, as if the two opinions are of equal weight. But people do it all the time. They do it, and it really is stupid, and it lacks humility, and it even lacks thought, because if people would think it through, it's an absurdity. It is as stupid as it is lacking in humility and lacking in thought as me arguing with the mechanic. No, I know better. It's the alternator. And the guy said, no, I'm telling you, it's just, it's the starter motor. And you go back and forth. Oh, well, we'll agree to disagree then. You have your opinion. We're on the same level here. I don't know why I digressed onto that tangent. It's just something I hear all the time. Anyway, these guys are good thinkers. They've thought things through. And I think it's really worth listening to, because they do cover quite a few little topics here. Unfortunately, I'm not sure I'm going to have the sort of time I would like to have to sort of comment on some of the more pertinent issues that I would like to expand upon, because they do move here, about every 7 minutes, they kind of tend to move into a different topic. But this is Doug Casey, and he has his website's called The International Man, and a friend of his, a gentleman called Matthew Smith. Well worth a listen, and these videos are well worth a listen. And hopefully I can maybe get Doug or Matthew on. I'd like to get Doug on, because he's, he's done more, I suppose, and he's better known. But Matthew's, he's a good guy. He's a sharp guy.
I want to talk about the fact that there's not been any real economic impact from all of this hysteria that's happened, all the lockdowns. It seems like we haven't actually experienced what is this wave of economic reality that must come our way. And specifically, one of the easy areas, as you can see it coming in, is with regard to housing. And, there's a CDC has a ban on evictions. You cannot evict anyone until January 1st. If that doesn't get extended, then they'll have more evictions on January 1st than they've had ever in any single month. So there's all this pent up pressure, and where people aren't making rent payments, and eventually it has to work itself out. How do you think this goes?
Well, as Ayn Rand once said, you can, I think I'm quoting this correctly, you can avoid reality, but you can't avoid the consequences of reality. So I think that's pretty much what they're doing. This is a variation on their previous extend and pretend philosophy that led to the collapse of 2008.
Actually, the quote is, and as Doug probably knows, you can avoid reality, but you can't avoid the consequences of avoiding reality, rather than you can avoid the consequences of reality. So it's, if you can avoid reality, but you can't avoid the consequences of avoiding reality, which is very true.
This is going to be bigger. It's funny. Being, in some ways, I feel like a perma-bear, in that, for decades.
You qualify, yes.
Yeah, I would. I would. I mean, for just decades, I looked at the economic situation, and I said, hey, this doesn't add up. It's going to lead to a catastrophe. Now, that hasn't stopped me from actually making a lot of money in the marketplace. And people confuse these two things. I mean, have I been long the Dow Jones over these many years? Well, the answer is no. The closest that I've come was buying government bonds back in the early 80s, when I could buy, what was I getting? I was buying 10-year bonds at 80 cents on government bonds, 80 cents on the dollar, that had a 10% coupon. So I bought a lot of those then, and I held on to them for several years. I should have held them to maturity, as it turned out. But I guess that's part of the fact that I look at the economic situation, always have, and I said, this is going to end really, really badly. And it doesn't help that I've spent a lot of time reading about the collapse of Athens and the collapse of Rome and other civilizations. And I can see, you know what? The U.S. is like on steroids in these directions. So, all right, explain the fact that, you know, I'm a perma-bear in that. And every time that we've come to the edge of the precipice, I thought, well, they really should. They definitely could go over the edge. And they didn't. In 1980, when interest rates were high, and they avoided it with the market meltdown of 2000, and they avoided it again with the meltdown of 2000.
And the reason they avoided it in 1980 was because of Paul Volcker. Paul Volcker raised interest rates, and he raised them quite dramatically. And at the time, as painful as the medicine was to swallow, America swallowed it. And of course, in America, there's a knock-on effect to the Western countries as well. But they swallowed it, and the economy recovered. But there is no political will in the United States now for that medicine, because the interest rates would cause so much pain, and it would be much longer than the pain that was suffered in that correction, a healthy correction in 1980. However, as painful and as much longer as it would have been as in 1980, it's still going to be less painful and shorter than the other option, which is just to keep printing money, keep the interest artificially low, keep pumping up the stock market, keep devaluing the currency, because that is going to be, when that event, and this is what he's referring to, when that event really occurs, which is essentially will revolve around the collapse of the dollar, it's going to be just unprecedented carnage. And the dominoes for that have been set in motion because, as I say, the debt is too big now. The bubbles are everywhere in the bond market, in the stock market, in the property market. There's a sovereign debt crisis that can never be paid back. So they're just going to inflate the debt away. And they're in the process of destroying small businesses. And it's going to be the biggest robbery in human history by the Jewish bankers. That's what's happening right now. And, of course, for the politicians, they don't want to be coming in and raising interest rates because that causes too much suffering on the short term. So there's no appetite for that. It's like a drug addict. He said, I don't want to go to rehab yet. I'll go to rehab next year. Just give me more cocaine now. That's what's happening because he's taking too many drugs and the come down is just unbearable for him. So he's not going to do what he needs to do to get well. And that's where we're at now. And that's the difference between what happened in 1980 with Paul Volcker and what's happening now.
2010. And now we're in another thing. Because every time they've done something more extraordinary, I mean, quantitative easing, printing up trillions of dollars, okay? And reducing interest rates below zero, which I thought was metaphysically impossible. Well, it turned into a tax, so... Actually, it's not metaphysically impossible if you look at it as a tax, yeah, which it is. Okay, so now, with this COVID hysteria, which they've created, which I guess some of these people think is a great thing, because it increases the power, has increased the power of the state tremendously, nationally, internationally, and locally, even down to the county and small town level. Okay, so are they going to pull it out again this time and we once go back into a boom? You know what? I think this probably is the real thing. And kind of the first thing that's actually going to bring the country to reality is the fact, it's what you brought up, that, let's get the numbers correct if possible. There's 12 million people, or families, I should say, or entities, individuals and families. I think it's 12 million apartments and houses, rental units, that have been in forbearance for, what, 9 months?
Yep.
And about, is it 5 million or?
It's the estimate.
Mortgages.
Yes.
Okay. Well, these numbers are so big that, you know, rounding errors are leading to six figures. But,
well, actually, no, I'm sorry. As of September 9th, 48 million households with mortgage payments were behind on their mortgage payments.
Hmm.
As of September 9th, 48 million were behind. Most of those were not in forbearance or anything like that yet, but still, that seems like a startling statistic.
Yeah, it is. And when they're behind, that means that the landlord, many of them being small landlords that are trying to make their way in the world by buying a couple condos, running them out or whatever, they've been forced to forbear, but they want their money.
They need it.
So if the guy couldn't pay for the last 9 months, how is he going to make up that difference now? Forget about get your payments. How's that going to work?
Well, I shared with you this New York Times article where they were proposing some solutions. I sent you this New York Times article where they were proposing some solutions. I don't know if you saw it, but you know, one of the things in there was they said they talked about you know, a short-term universal basic income for everybody. That would help. That's one of their ideas, of course. That's like the easiest one, it seems like. The second one is they wanted to have, this was a more modest plan, they said. They called for the government to finance 10-year-long low interest rate loans to tenants so they could pay back their accrued rent to the landlord, make them whole. So they want to, you know, they offer this loan program essentially, because all the solutions are debt-based, right? So it's just burdening these people who are unemployed because we shut down all the businesses that employ them. Let's burden them with some debt, but at a low interest rate, so it's fine. And so that the banks, you know, all the money gets back to the banks. And the other thing that he said is that, and this is the thing probably concerns me the most, is he said most critically, they said there's going to be properties that hit the market and that there's, you know, these vulture investors that are going to come and pick them up. And so, and apparently there's 47.5 million rental units are not corporate owned. So, you know, they're just mom and pop kind of things. You know, so it's a huge number of rental properties that are not corporate owned. And they're like, these are going to be coming on the market. So a lot of these are going to be coming on the market eventually. It has to get liquidated. And so they say, we need a government-sponsored affordable housing acquisition fund and legislation that gives it first priority to scoop up properties.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to concentrate ownership of real wealth. The hands of really rich people and the Federal Reserve, which will buy things, which is going to have even more assets that they're never going to be able to liquidate, quite frankly. So the country is actually being socialized, socialism being defined as state ownership of the means of production. And means of production, capital assets. Yeah, that's actually happening.
One of the two biggest areas where most Americans have captured wealth is in their home. You know, whether homes are overpriced and that's, you know, real or not, but they have the value in their home. And then the other part is in small businesses. And so you have this kind of dual front attack on them, basically, where small businesses are basically not allowed to operate. But large businesses are, and I shared with you that Rick Santelli, Andrew Ross Sorkin debate where they were talking about how, you know, big box stores are totally fine, but churches are bad, and so are small restaurants, you know. And anyway, it seems like those businesses are being totally squeezed. People pushed to the point of bankruptcy. These small businesses are just going to be gone. The benefit of that accrues to these large organizations, and which are much easier. Unlimited access to financing, essentially, from the Fed, who's willing to buy junk debt. And then on the real estate side of things, you have, you know, homeowners, and we're just going to be similarly. They either have to, if you're a landlord, you're going to have to evict people, or you're going to have be foreclosed on yourself. Like, those things seem, they have to happen. One of those two has to happen.
gestures. Yeah, exactly. I mean, actions actually do have consequences, although a lot of times they can be delayed for quite a while. But then the interest compounds. So the payments, both mortgages and rental payments, were in forbearance. Well, they're going to be made up, and perhaps the government will float a bond that can lend that money to these renters. Well, I guess we'll be further in debt at that point. It's questionable whether they'll be able to dismiss it through bankruptcy, much the way student loans can't be dismissed through bankruptcy. So it's, once again, turning people into the equivalent of serfs, where they're actually tied down by their debt. If you have less debt, you have no flexibility to move or to try something new or anything. You just got the monkey on your back. So yeah, it's moving further in that direction. And the other thing is the guaranteed annual income payments, or what they have been getting so far, the freebies, that's taxable income, I understand. I don't know if they'll actually make it that way, but they say it's that way. So these people aren't going to be able to pay those taxes. They've already frittered it all away.
Right, and it's not just
that. Even if they've gotten lucky, so far in the stock market, when the stock market melts down, they'll lose it all. Then what happens?
Yeah, and it's... same thing happened we were talking earlier about these PPP loans that a lot of businesses signed up for and got. If you had decent accountants, they were all encouraging you to do this, to take this money because it was a loan that would be forgivable if you just met a couple of basic criteria. Now, that's what it was rolled out. Over time, though, you find out more details about it. You know, it's like the timing and when you can actually, the loan becomes forgivable and then you have to claim income on it. And apparently that's taxable. And, just it's much more, of course, way more complicated than what it looked like at first, which was just free money from the government, which, of course, you should always be suspicious of. There is no such thing as free money from the government.
There isn't even a free lunch. Forget about free money.
So what
I'm asking you, since I'm a certified perma-bear, and I like to say I always look at the bright side of things, but I can't help saying the dark side of things too. What's the way out of this? What do you see? I don't see any way out without really chaos, financial, economic, political, social, probably military, probably with the Chinese. So what do you think? What am I missing here?
Well, obviously,
we need a perma bill. We need a perma bill.
We do need a perma bill.
That's the bright side. Tell us. I want to know where I'm wrong. I really do.
It's arguable that I think in the short term, the consolidation of these large enterprises, the inefficient deployment of capital in these different small businesses, you know, as that gets liquidated through the system, like it actually could cause the economy to grow substantially. Because of the lack of, I come up with a theory around it anyway, but that could happen. And then certainly the stock market with all the money that's coming in would certainly could go a lot higher from here potentially. And but the problem is the social parts, I think, is where you get in real trouble, because you have, along the way you've had, you know, millions of lives are devastated by this. There's just no way around it. They're just totally and utterly devastated. I mean, people who have family businesses that have worked for three generations on, you know, every dollar gets, because they don't get access to free money like, BlackRock or someone like that would. So they have to put all their capital right back into the business. It's all trapped there. And then seemingly overnight, it's actually been let dry over about 9 months now. The business basically gets reduced to zero, where they have nothing there. And then the unintended consequences of that, you know, so they get shut down, and so all the employees, the second and third order, with the suppliers, and I just think that just you have this, you're going to have a large, desperate, the part of the population that was independent of the government, which was most people, and they didn't really need the government, are going to come out of this and see where they absolutely do need, or feel like they need the government in some way, you know, they're not going to know what else to do. So I think that's a society problem is what I worry about.
I think you're absolutely right. And from the point of view of the real estate market, since all the local governments are basically bankrupt and running, you know, lots of red ink now, thinking the way county commissioners do, they're going to raise taxes on real estate because everybody knows rich people are the ones that own the real estate. Right. So real estate's going to become even more unaffordable to hold on to. And when you're squeezed and you're a real estate owner, you got to cut your expenses wherever you can to pay urgent expenses. So what do? You defer maintenance. And this is why Eastern Europe and the old Soviet Union looked like Berlin in 1945, because they hadn't done any maintenance for decades and decades, because you can defer it. And so it'll be the general degradation of everything, quite frankly, for that reason. And I just don't see. Well, I see the way out. It's to all the real wealth in the world is still going to be there if we have a financial economic collapse. I mean, the buildings are not going to fall down immediately. Technology still exists. People still have skills. Well, that'll all still exist. So the best thing to do is what happened in the Depression after World War I, which had some similarities to this one, because then we have the Spanish flu, which in terms adjusted for the population then and the population now, the number of deaths, about 2 million Americans died, adjusted for today, the equivalent to, I think the actual number was about 600,000 Americans died in 1919. So you had that. You had the huge readjustment after the lockdown of the economy under Wilson in World War I. But they just let it all happen. And, you know, it was fine. By 1922, the country was back into a boom again. That's what they should do. Let people become unemployed, and they'll have to figure out, listen, a lot of people be living under bridges. But then again, prices of real estate will fall tremendously. Rents will fall. And, people will come back in at affordable rents. Affordable mortgages, it'll happen. A lot of banks will fail, of course. I mean, it'll be chaos, but it'll be short and get over. But they're going to drag this out, and the government is going to do more, much more. The economy is going into a catastrophe with the Democrats trying to figure out how the government will fix it. Ever more money and more regulations stop these things from happening and readjusting. So yeah, I'm a not just a perma bear. I'm like a super grizzly bear from a comic book at this point. That's how bad it's going to be. One of those kind of grizzly bears.
Yeah, I wonder if so. What would be the plausible way that it could be steered differently? I mean, it seems to me that if the small business owners who are being effectively ruined by this, it seems like they're the if they would just stop cooperating, you know, whole cloth with all this insanity, I think maybe then you would allow, you might have to be a different path.
And that is the only hope. But sadly, most people are spineless and compliant, and they will sit back, and it's this audacity thing. And that's what's happening. This has all been done by audacity. It's happening because people are allowing it to happen. And that's the most painful, tragic thing about all of it, I think. How about you just don't comply? What are they going to do, arrest everybody? How about you just keep your business open? How about people just keep shopping? How about people just ignore it and say, you have no right to be telling me what I can do, where I can go, when I can shop, how many people I can shop with, how many people I can meet up with, in what homes, and all the rest of it. How about you have no business telling me when I can go to church and what I do in that church? But alas, most people are just spineless and lack character, lack, you know, even the ones who know. I mean, there is the ignorance problem. The people who are just hopelessly enslaved by mainstream media and who can never embrace truth because it rocks their worldview way too much for them to be ever to be comfortable. But you would expect more from people who have put their whole lives into business and their whole into their businesses. They're just going to watch those businesses crumble. They're going to watch their church attendance, which apparently is so dear to them, come to an end. They just do. They go to church when they're allowed to, and then they don't when they don't. People go out when they're allowed to, then they don't when they don't. The government just is like, you know, you can go out. Oh, no, you have to go back in. And that's the only hope. And I've said it all along. People should have never embraced this lockdown in the first place. They should have recognized the overreach of government. Now people are in a weaker position. They've got these extra powers. They've allowed themselves to be normalized by these lockdowns. And that's what people do. And the enemy gets stronger. It's not rocket science. It just takes a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of character. And both of those things are an extremely short supply. I mean, if knowledge and courage at this stage were a commodity, they would be one of the most expensive commodities in the world because they're so rare. It's just tragic to watch because people are going to just watch this whole thing go down. It's painful to watch.
My worry is that people just continue to go along with this. They go along with it until basically they're bled dry and driven to the point of economic desperation, where then whatever solution the government...
There you go. He's just... there's a guy with some sense. This is why I'm playing this, because I relate to these people so much. They get it. They understand. There's very few people like that around. Because your options are limited. That is the your best option. Non-compliance. Matthew here understands it.
Decides it's going to happen is the only one. There really isn't anymore. I mean, when your wealth is your blood dry, you just don't, your options dissipates. Like you said with you know, with debt, you end up being a serf. The same thing happens. And so the people who have some capital still, the average, you know, small business owner has some capital. If they're just going along with closing my doors and just hoping for another PPP check or something, I just think that disaster, like, we end up in the worst case scenario, I guess, if people are basically just go along and roll over and decide to just destroy their capital. I mean, they're voluntarily destroying their own capital now. It's insane.
Yeah, it is, because they're exhausting their personal savings, they're exhausting other investments outside of their business in order to keep the business open. And so it's not just the cyclical turnover of small businesses where 5 or 10 or 15% of all small business, 20% fail every year. This is the normal cycle of life, if you would. But when they all fail at once, it's not like getting a bad burn on your hand, which you'll recover from, painful as it is. It's like getting third-degree burns on 5 or 10 or 15% of all small business, 20% fail every year. This is the normal cycle of life, if you would. But when they all fail at once, it's not like getting a bad burn on your hand, which you'll recover from, painful as it is. It's like getting third-degree burns on 50% of your body. That's different than just a bad burn on your hand, which is what the normal cycle of life was all about. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. And those people in the restaurant business, if they want to stay in the food service business, well, I guess they're going to, their diner or their dive or their drive-in, little restaurants. I guess they're going to have to go to work for McDonald's or Popeyes.
Right.
They want to stay in business, which is great for McDonald's and Popeyes.
Exactly. I mean, I drive by Starbucks and the lines in the drive-thru is longer than I've ever seen them. You know, they're doing great. But all the non-national chains are just getting crushed by this. And there's just no way. It's just there's no way to avoid it, except I think if they just stop complying with it. But they'd have to do it like en masse.
But the problem is that when they don't comply, as we talked about the other day, it's for technical reasons. In other words, hey, this isn't serious enough to make me do this. No, that's not the argument you make. I'm not going to do it because you don't have the right to do it. It's my property.
Right.
Instead of saying, oh yeah, it's a problem, but you've got to be more mellow about it, and you got to make exceptions, and maybe social distance to 3 feet, not 6 feet. Now these are. You're guaranteed to lose if you make arguments like that. They're unprincipled.
You don't negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah, essentially. That's.
And that's exactly what the government are. Terrorists. And he's quite right. You don't negotiate with the terrorists. You don't say, oh, can we open for an extra day? Or can we, as he said, you know, have 3 feet? The whole premise is, you don't get to tell us. It's my property. I'm not negotiating with you, because the mindset and the psychology is that you're asking permission. It's like I said to the pastor when I was online with him. It's like me telling his wife what to do. It's not my place, any more than it's the government's place to be telling me what I can do in church or what I can do with my business. It's none of their business, literally. And that's the premise, and that's the problem that people have. They don't understand that. They don't say, no, you don't. When did you get these powers? When, you know, of course, you see, that should have happened before, at the start when they told us to lock down. But the damage is done, because then they handed over the powers with these emergency powers, and now they have the powers.
That's correct. Or the criminally insane, which I think accurately characterizes people like de Blasio and Cuomo in New York.
Well, just the people who have zero skin in the game, you know, who consistently they earn their income regardless of what happens. And this is not just the politicians. I think this is a lot of people who have certain jobs. I think there's some article I read maybe a week or two ago that said, but for roughly a third of the population, the quality of life from this whole COVID thing has gone way up. I mean, all these extra things they'd have to do. The commute is now not, you know, they can do all the work from home. Their pay is not diminished. They get Amazon delivery same day. Like, it's, you know, they get out of social engagements they weren't really interested in doing anything.
Anyway, that's another good point made by Matthew, and a point that I've made myself. You know, for some, particularly the public sector and those who are, you know, working from home, yeah, they've got better lives. Yeah, there's a few people, but, you know, I don't know how many of them. But there are people who are invested in these lockdowns because it works out well for them, and or so they think. They're very economically ignorant, first of all, because they haven't thought it through, or the societal problems. But you have people on furlough. Of course, you have the public sector, government workers, the civil service, who suck on the public teat. And here's the irony. Who pays their wages? The private sector, because the government, the only way they can extract revenue to pay for those jobs is through the private sector and their taxes. So they can sit as smug as they want. They haven't thought it through where they're getting their money from, because it comes from the private sector, which the government is in the process of destroying, along with the debasement of the currency. Because they're all, as I say, they're all the public sector jobs are all funded by the taxpayer, and the tax base is diminishing dramatically because of these reckless policies of lockdowns destroying the private sector, particularly hospitality. But it's still a big enough sector to matter. So maybe the public sector should think about that. But you see, they don't care, as I say, at this point, because they're still getting their wages. And the teachers don't have to go to school, because they can say they don't want to go to school, so they can sit in their asses and have their Marxist unions lobby for them and say, oh, they're not safe in the schools. And other such local councils where they're economies are run by usually labor leftist type Marxist types who believe money grows on trees. They are invested in these lockdowns and amplifying the coronavirus narrative too, because their economies are pathetic. And a lot of the time it's because of corrupt labor type politicians and local officials, whether it's in this country or in America, and, you know, Marxist type policies. Because if they go into lockdown, then they can have, oh, we need a support package. Sadiq Khan's always at this. There's all sorts of Marxist labor type local councils in the UK who love these lockdowns, because they can say, oh, well, to balance it out, you know, we need these lockdowns. Like, that balances out the economy, shutting, destroying the economy and getting the government to print up more money and get into increase the national debt, all the while having a significantly diminished tax base. It's insanity. But you see, people don't think things through. They're selfish. They're ignorant. But there are people beyond, they can say it's about the coronavirus, but no, it's about getting free money a lot of the time. And that's why Joe Biden, apart from the corruption, any votes he got would have been for people who wanted free money. And that's why secession is probably the best thing in America. Let them have their free money, because the free money is going to run out. And then they'll be living under bridges and they'll be starving. And people want to get away from that, because particularly with, you know, righty, violent black communities, you want to distance yourself from that as much as possible, because they're bad enough at normal times. But when it gets really bad, they are going to be a genuine danger. At least over there in America, you've got guns. And that's, again, that's not to say all black people are like that. Of course not. But there's enough of them. We can look at Baltimore and Chicago and South London and anywhere where there's a rising black population. It's chaos. So you don't want to really throw fuel in the fire with that, with, you know, taking welfare away or whatever, increasing the poverty. But that's where it's going. That's where the dominoes will fall. I am back again on Monday on Republic Broadcasting Network with Richard Kerry on the Beyond the Official Narrative show at midday Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. UK time here in London. I'll be back here again on Revision Media on the 23rd, same time, 8 p.m. here in the UK. It's 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, I thought that was a good interview. It covered a lot. We didn't get through all of it, but that's Doug Casey, and it's called Doug Casey's Take, and he's interviewed by and has a discussion with a gentleman there called Matthew Smith. All right. Until then, folks, take care and God bless.